Okay, welcome everyone. Welcome Zadie, Bubby, hello, Marina, Arthur, and Judd, good to see you. I hope you're continuing to have Rafua Shalema. It's good to have you on with us. And
Thank you.
thank you guys for your flexibility. And it'll be 7 o'clock in general going forward. I just had a simcha that I was asked to go to, so I went there. Now I'm back, and now we can start. We find ourselves on Yud Beis Omid Aleph. We are on 12b. And as a reward from yesterday, because actually last week when we had a lot of math and calculations and numbers, so today we're going to have actually some really fun agadah, particularly at the end. The Gemara is returning back to its regular scheduled programming, which is going through Megillah in order of the Psukim and sharing different tidbits of drushos with us for how Chazal interpreted the Megillah. So for those looking at a regular text of Gemara, we are on the third wide line at the end. For those who have an art scroll, I would imagine, I think it would be the second page in art scroll if I had to wager somewhere around there. We're starting with Chiel Paras Umadai Hafartamim. Take a moment to find it, the two dots. It's a new section. Anyone need help? Okay, let's jump in. So we are continuing on through the Megillah. Chiel Paras Umadai Hafartamim, referring to Chiel Avir, the Air Force of soldiers. Of Paras Umadai, who were the officers. So you have to remember that Persia was a, I don't know what you call it, a conglomerate of different nations from beforehand. It was a successor to the Babylonian Empire. It's made up of different sub-nationalities. In fact, I think someone could correct me if I'm wrong, historically that may have been part of its downfall. Was that it? There's actually, I was watching some history on Persia that at one point the goal was to just allow every ethnicity and every region to govern based on its own customs. But then there was a push that actually to unify and standardize the Persian government. Anyway, so how do we understand this pasuk about Paras and Madai? Because on the one hand, it indicates that they are officers, but it writes, Uksiv Amalchim Madai
You're
Paras.
freezing. We can't hear you.
No? Any better? Looks like the connection's good.
Nope.
No, still not hearing?
Bad connection.
Anyone else having issues?
Yeah.
If you haven't, does anyone hear me? Speak up if you hear me.
Right
We
now,
hear you
yes.
for a while.
Before it was totally garbled.
Okay,
Didn't
well,
understand a
hopefully.
word.
Okay, since we're back, let's make use of the time while we still have a connection then. Okay. Usila, I don't get it. Are they officers or are they kings? Amarava, they made up they stipulated with each other. So if the king will come from your nation, then the governors will come from the other one. Sorry, if Ramos becomes the king, then you'll get the governors. If you get the king, Minan Ifrachi, then we get the governors. Okay, good. Some of these drushos we're going to learn. I mean, I'm sure you've learned all the commentaries on Agatha, their deeper meanings. But on the baseline shot level, some of these are just quick little quips. And then some of these are going to be more drawn out, a little bit lengthier. And so this is just a quick one. Next. Baroso is Osher Kavod Malchuso. So he, remember, he's showing off all of his wealth, his the kavod of his kingship. Amarav Yosi Rechanina, Melami Shalavash Bigdei Kahuna. This indicates that Achashverosh brought out the Bigdei, they wore the Bigdei Kahuna. Siv Hacha Yaker Tiferes Gedula. So he used the word Tiferes in the context over here in the Megillah. Uksiv Hasam, and in the Torah, when it refers to the garments of the Kohen Gadol, it says l'chavod ulstifares, the same word. This is a gezeirah shava of sorts that indicates to us that he was witness. Tifares is codename for the big day kahuna, the garments of the Kohen Gadol. Next, velos hayamim ha'ela, when these days became filled, when they came to completion, Rav Ushmuel. So Rav Ushmuel will have a dispute as to how to understand what Achashverosh did. Let me fill in the rest of it. What Achashverosh did was when he threw his party, he first threw a party for people who did not live in Shushan, and then he made a special one just for the residents of Shushan. So the question is, was this a wise move on his part, or was it a misjudgment to prioritize the out-of-towners over the in-towners? That is the question they ask at YUL. Chan Amar, Melch Mikeachaya, one of them says that Achashverosh was shrewd. He knew what he was doing. The Chan Amar, Melch Tipeishaya, the other one says, no, it's like what we learned in a previous week, that Achashverosh is not that intelligent. Maybe he had a lot of money. He bought his way into the kingship. But again, he's just a Tipeish. Ma'adar Melch Mikeachaya, Shaper Ovid, the Karvachika Bereisham. The one who says that Achashverosh was a knowledgeable person, he was a wise person, he knew what he was doing, so it makes sense that he would first bring in the out-of-towners. Why? Because you always have a chance to be mefayis the in-towners. I'll give a mushel now that hopefully I don't get in trouble for. You know, it's like when you're trying to form a service, so if you only have certain people that come from out of town 3 days a year to the shul, do you try to appeal to the people who are the in-towners, to the people who are the out-of-towners? So you have to make a cheshbon.
You're frozen.
Losing you.
Frozen. I guess somebody didn't think that was a good mushel.
So Kufa, this is the question. This is the question here in the Gemara, which is, Do you take the opportunity that there are people who are coming in only a little bit? Do you try your best to take that little time together? Or do you say...
You were totally frozen. We did not hear.
You know what? It's probably better off you didn't.
Probably.
Okay.
But you're frozen again.
I guess we have to make sure to zoom at the shul. It shows that I have 4 out of 5 yeah. Bars. That's the weird part. Let me see. Let me turn off my phone using the Wi-Fi. No, my phone's not using the Wi-Fi. I don't know what's using all the Wi-Fi. Okay. Can you hear me now? No? All frozen? Good?
Yeah.
Okay. Man, there were T-Pesh. The one that says that Shverish was a T-Pesh. He was a fool. T-Bile the Kruvi B'nei Masse Beresha. He should have actually been the Kari of the in-towners first. Dimardu Behana, because of the out-of-towners rebelled against him, Hani Havu Kayame Bahade, at least the in-towners would stand by him. Great. So again, Machlokis, if Achashverosh really knew what he was doing or not. Next, Sholu Talmidavis Rashmi. Here is a fundamental question. So the students of Rashi Rechoy asked him as follows. Why do the haters of Israel, we've seen this many times, it's a euphemism. Why did the Jewish people deserve to be destroyed? Now we did tshuva, we fasted, and Hashem gave us the Yeshua in the end. But originally, we did something that Hashem was gozer, that the Jewish people should be annihilated. What do we do that was so terrible to be deserving of it? Amrelhem, Ibrahim. Rishon Rechai says, I'm not going to spoon feed it to you. You tell me what you think. Yeah, right. That's what teachers do all the time. They say, what do you guys think? Engage the audience. I'm not so good at that, I know. Amrlo, Mibdei Masha Nando Misudasa Shal Osa Rasha. They said, oh, because they went to be Nehene from the Suda of Achashverosh. Now notice, I'm going to explain in a moment, what's the issue with being Nehene? It should say they didn't eat from the Suda of the Rasha. So, for this, we have to ask the following question. What was at the Suda of Achashverosh that was so terrible? You know what? I'm gonna pull a page from Rashi Rechai's playbook. I'm gonna ask you guys what you think. What do you think was so bad about going to the Suda of Achashverosh?
Did he have treifa there?
Oh, very good. So Phyllis knows I got a bunch of opinions down over here. The Maharsha addresses. So the question that Maharsha asked is, okay, there was trefos, there was nevela over there, there was non-kosher food. But most non-kosher food that you'll eat, It might be an iser in the Torah to eat it, but you're not a chayiv misa for eating non-kosher food, right? So the question is, maybe they committed a terrible sin, but not one that they'd be chayiv misa for, right? Good question. So there's a few answers that are given. One is, look at the words again, where it says, "Mipnei nehenu misudas shalos harasha." Doesn't say "Mipnei achlu misudas shalos harasha," because they ate from the suda. What does "nehene" allude to? That they had hana, that they had some sort of pleasure.
We'll
get there in a moment. So, what does "nehene" refer to? "Nehene" refers to the Medrash Rabba tells us on Esther. It refers to Gilei Arayis. It refers to sexual impropriety. And once they drank and they became drunk, we're going to see this in the Gemara soon. All sorts of crazy things were going down at the Suda. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't inherently the non-kosher food that they ate that would make them deserving of destruction, but it was bad in of itself, and it was a gateway to worse things. That's what the word Nanu comes to indicate. Mm-hmm. Another suggestion is given by Sefer Rosh Yosef, Rafted Diet. Wow, that's an interesting name. So he suggests, based on the Maharsha, that actually they were eating chalev and dam, forbidden fats and blood, that actually carry with them an iser kares, divine excision, which is a form of, it's not a death penalty that the Beis Din Shalmata gives, but it's one that the Beis Din Shalmaila, the heavenly court, will give. Now, how does kares differ from Misa V'Dei Shemayim? There's discussion about exactly, maybe it's amount of years, maybe it's a call for the next world versus this world. There's different opinions on that. But that makes more sense. If the issue is non-kosher food, you know, I eat pig. Pig's bad, but I shouldn't die because I eat pig. So if you ate dam and chalev, it's a little bit more understandable. Still, that's hard. It's not satisfying. So this gets to, I think, Phyllis, what you were alluding to. Another suggestion that he gives is that the etzem ishtafusam b'mishta aver shachil Hashem. What did we just say was going on at the Suda Achashverosh? We didn't even get to everything yet. There was crazy stuff going down there. But what did we note at the beginning? What was something that was very egregious that was being done there? He took the garments of the Kohen Gadol. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about it. So he took the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. We looked at last week also. And he put them on display. He was actively being mevazeh. He was actively disrespecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Beis HaMikdash and all the kelim from there, wearing the big day kahuna like it's Purim, like, you know, little yankel, where's the Kohen Gadol costume? That's what he was doing. So how can we take part in something which is such a huge chilul Hashem? Yeah, maybe, you know what? I don't want to get too far afield. You know, lots of controversial statements this evening. But this is like in Kashrus, there's a question about what kind of establishments should have a hechsher on them. So this came up, I remember, during the whole Ben and Jerry's issue, a debate about, like, how bad does something have to be that a kosher certifying agency will not certify or pull a hashgacha for a non-directly kosher-related infraction. So a good distinction, I wish I could give him credit, I forgot who it was, but he's a kosher professional. He said that there's a difference between putting a hashgacha on a product versus a hashgacha on a restaurant. When you put on the product, you're literally just making a statement about the product, not about, you know, the ideology of a company. But when you put your hashgacha on a restaurant, you're not just putting on the food. You're saying, this is a kosher establishment to go to. So, you know, if they're serving glatt kosher food, and you'll excuse my language, and they're serving at a gentleman's club, I think it's very obvious that you can't put a hechsher on there. So that's basically what's going on in the Suda Achashverosh. They may have been eating glatt kosher food. It may have been, you know, chasina shishchita. It may have had all of the hidurim and chumras that you could possibly think of. But at the end of the day, like, what is the Suda celebrating? The Suda is celebrating. Remember we talked about last week? Why did Achashverosh throw a Suda? Because he thought the 70 years were up and the Jews are not going to be brought back. God's not taking back the Jews. They will not be redeemed. There's no Yeshua. There's no salvation for them. And then he celebrated. And that's the Suda the Jewish people are going to come to. So, the food might technically be kosher, but the establishment, what's going on over here, is really egregious. And to take part in this ultimate form of Chilul Hashem, it's much more understandable, perhaps, according to this opinion in the Gemara, why the Jewish people were deserving of destruction. that I personally find a little bit more satisfactory than, you know, they're eating some, a little bit of non-kosher food there. Eating non-kosher food's bad, but that happens a little bit more often than we'd like. Okay. Now, that was the opinion, by the way, the suggestion given by the students of Reish Shem Bar Yochai. However, back into the Gemara, Reish Shem Bar Yochai said, in Cain, if the Isser was that they went to the Suda of Achashverosh, in Cain, Shebashushan Yahargu, Shebachol Olam Kula Yahargu? So, if so, the residents of Shushan should be put to death. Well, the Jews were hanging around Shushan when? The Jews were living all over the 127 regions of Achashverosh's kingdom. They weren't being all irregular. They weren't all traveling down to be there at the party of Achashverosh. So why do all the Jews have to be destroyed? Now, one of the suggestions given, by the way, is Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh. This is one of my favorite statements that people use, not misused. I wouldn't call it a misuse. That'd be too strong. But usually when you hear the term, hear the phrase Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh, what do you imagine? You imagine a rabbi getting up and saying, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh. We are all one nation and one people. And you walk away with a fuzzy feeling about how the Jews are all one. But actually, the real original source for Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh is in the story of Achan and Sefer Yeshua, right? Mark Waxel is teaching Shmuel now, but I assume Yeshua at one time must have been taught here. So if you remember, Achan, he broke the ban and he took from the spoils of war that were supposed to be consecrated to God. So wait, why is everyone punished for his sin? The answer is, one of the answers, that well, he knew what he was doing and we didn't stop him, then we are complicit in that sin. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh. So actually, the original source of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh is in a much more negative context, which actually fits right over here. That maybe the Jews of Shushan were the ones who actively were attending the Suda, but the fact that the rest of the Jewish people didn't blink, they didn't care that that was happening, they were considered complicit in the act of their brothers and sisters in Shushan. Okay. So Amrulo, Amora Tos. Okay, we give up. Tell us. Amrulahem Rabbi Shemar Yochai says, what was the sin, according to me, why the Jewish people had to be destroyed? Because they prostrate themselves to an image. Now Rashi says, what's this image referred to? The Bimei Nebuchadnezzar. And this was a sin that they committed, and then God at this point decided to take the vengeance upon them. Now, another interpretation could be, and this one arguably could be the more obvious way to understand it, is that they bowed down to Haman, who had a tzelem around his neck. So there's a whole discussion about, well, during the times of Nebuchadnezzar, they, well, you'll see right now, actually, Amrlo. So if so, why is Hashem going easy on them? They committed Avodah Zarah by prostrating to an image of an idol. How do you come back from that? How do you do tshuva from that? The Jews should have been wiped out for such a terrible sin. So the Jewish people, when they bowed down to the idol, they didn't do so wholeheartedly. You know, sometimes I daven like this. You know, like I just bow down. I'm not really thinking about what I'm doing. So the Jewish people, like, you know, they bowed down. That was the etiquette of what you did. But they didn't really intend to be worshiping Avodah Zarah. They just were afraid I'd be off with their heads. Now, it's interesting. What does this remind us of? A story that comes up in Gittin, that's in the Book of Maccabees. You have a story with all the kids. They refused to bow down. It's like, I'll make it as if you're not really bowing down to the idol. Here, pick up this, candy. I don't know, pick up something that's on the floor. It'll look like you're prostrate to the idol. No, I won't even bow down to that. So, you know, maybe they're on a higher madriga. But the Jewish people didn't do it wholeheartedly. But maybe one could say during the times of Haman, perhaps it was. Anyway, since the Jews didn't wholeheartedly worship Avodah Zarah, they were coerced into doing it. It was still a terrible thing. It's still something in theory you're supposed to give up your life for, but it was done under coercion. So it's much easier to come back from that to do tshuva for a sin that you were coerced into, even something as terrible as Avodah Zarah. So That was their sin. They did tshuva, and thank God we're all alive here well today because the Jews did tshuva. Okay. That brings the end of that piece of the Gemara. Any questions before we move on? Anything we can clarify in the Gemara that we just learned? Signal still good? You hear me?
Yes.
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Okay, let's hope it, we keep the chazaka going. Let's continue. Bachatzar kinas beisan. So there are three different places that the suda took place in. You have the courtyard, you have the garden, and you have the actual palace area. Beisan amach. So why do I need three different places? Well, there was economy class, there was business class, and there was first class. So this is classism over here, right? There, you know, you got the bronze, silver, and gold tiers. Get whatever muscle you want. So the people who had the higher tickets, they got to go into the palace. The next, the best, were in the garden. And all the people who, you know, didn't RSVP to the program and just came on the spot, they were put into the chutzpah. So that's why it's important to RSVP the programs. We have a Scott, I'll make my pitch now. We have a Scott residence program coming up next Shabbos. Make sure to RSVP. Okay, I fulfilled my my obligation of promoting the event now, Toby. I'm good? Maria? Yeah? Okay, good. Sign up. Amar, Hoshiva b'chutzpah v'lo hexi kasam. So they started off in the courtyard, you know, COVID restrictions, we want a social distance. Then there was not enough room over there. So then they moved everyone to the garden. And then they're like, okay, I'm going to, you know, lift the mandate. Everyone can come inside and doors into the palace now. No zoo. But the braces is, but Masnisa Tana Hoshiva Machatzer, the Pasach Lahem Shnei Sakh of Echlegina Echlebeson. Similar, but an alternative understanding. Everybody was in the courtyard, and then they opened up the option. Those who want to go to the garden, you have the COVID safe outdoor option. Those who want to go to the palace indoors, welcome indoors. So you see, they're observing these guidelines before it was popular. Good. Next piece. Chor karpas utchevas. And we're not talking about what's on your Seder plate. My chor, what is chor referred to? It's good because I'm reading through Megillah. I'm also confused what all these things are. Rav Amar, Chari Chari, it refers to that the garments they had many holes in it. They were very, they were sewn in a very sophisticated manner.
Oh, there is, excuse me, Rabbi, there is a connection to the Seder plate.
Ah. Yeah.
Rashi's explanation on the Ketona Pasim.
Let me see, where's Rashi here? Where's Rashi? I don't have a Rashi that.
No, it's not. It's a Rashi and it's a Targum in Bereishis that the.
Do tell.
This is a Seder Dvar Torah that.
I never heard this one. I'm sure with the Seder.
That the Unklos uses the word karpas in explaining the Ketonet Pasim, which was the whole jealousy and therefore the whole beginning of the going down to Mitzrayim with the jealousy among the brothers. So that's one of the reasons why we use karpas at the Seder.
Wow. So much geula, geula, connecting Purim and Pesach together. I like it.
I'm curious to know if there's a connection to Hur, the one who held up Moshe's hands against Amalek.
Interesting. You know, guys, we're going to have to write a whole Haggadah together for next year. Everyone, make your contributions now. We'll put together a publication. That would be nice thing to do one day. Okay. So, what is Chor? Chor is Chari Chari Hole. Shmuel Amar Milas Levana. This refers to a kind of wool that was white. I said Milas Mithril. Hitzielahem. So, he spread out this very fine white wool. Karpas Amar of Yossi Brachanina. Karim Shel Pasim. These are cushions that are made, again, of a special kind of wool. So it is possible, like you mentioned before, Henry. Okay. So what we have over here we have these rods of silver, these pillars of marble, mito sahava chesef, and these beds or couches, depending on how you understand it, of gold and silver. Tanya Rehudomer. similar theme of classism. Haroi lekesef lekesef, haroi lezav lezahav. You know, there's everyone's equal, but some are more equal than others. So everyone gets to come to the Suda, but some have the silver level, some get the gold level. So
now we're an animal farm.
Yes. Thank you, Zaini. I'm glad someone got the reference. I'm sure you all did. Amar lo Rav Nechemya, in kein, but if so, if we're going to have capitalism, then there's going to be kina amongst everyone. So then, rather, what does it mean? Everyone got the same couches that were made of silver, and their feet were made, their legs were made out of gold. So everyone was on a level playing field. So there's a similar tension that we saw before about how do we understand Bagatzar Ginas Beisan HaMelech? Are we saying that there's different classes of people who got their own levels? Or, you know, it's funny actually, because this also ties back to the earlier Gemara we saw about what was Ahasuerus trying to do over here. If Ahasuerus was having his party so he could be on good terms with everyone, you would think putting people in separate classes won't really curry you favor with the commoners. You want them to stand up for you if there's a rebellion. So that's something to think about.
Moving forward. I think he was giving preference to the ones who were most influential, and therefore the ones who would affect the lower classes to either support him or oppose him.
Right, so you have to share with his oligarchs. Exactly. I guess any government society, there's always the elite. I'm just watching the video from the, the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So, you know, you basically that have like...
That was crazy. 2,600 people in one room.
Oh, well, that was actually how Trevor Noah, the comedian, opened up. He's like, I'd just like to welcome you all to the biggest super spreader event of 2022. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, and they have their own state. You know, they get to do what they want, but they tell, okay, I'm going to stop now. So what are these things that we are mischototos about? So Rashi says, what's mischototos? Ritzba asalahem ba'avanu chatutos. He made a floor for them that was made out of avanu chatutos, klomar, shalboli de adam elabuto reach. That you have to work for it. You have to have amelos. You have to put tircha into it in order to make such beautiful stones. I haven't looked into it, but I'm sure there's like some sort of homiletic understanding of this with the pasuk, of course, of Amni Nezer, about somebody who digs deep enough, who goes through the sionos in order to delve and derive the secrets and the beauty of Torah. The Dor v'Socharis. So what do we got? We got Dor and Socharis. Rav Amar, what does Dor mean? Dori, Dori. This refers to different rows, okay? Shmuel Amar, Eben Tova Yish B'Krache Hayam. There is this beautiful stone that is found in the cities by the sea. The Dara Shema, and its name is Dara. Oshiva as a Suda. In the Irlahem Gitzarayim, he brought it out in the middle of the Suda and it's shown to them like the afternoon. This is like the, anyone who watched The Hobbit, it's like the Arkenstone. So, the Vei Rabbi Shmuel Tana Shekara Dror Lechul Bali Skor. What is Dror? And you shall proclaim liberty throughout the land. It's the same word, Dror. And so he proclaimed liberty to all the Bali Sechora. In other words, you know, at the end of Megillah says Ahasuerus levied a tax. Well, where were the taxes beforehand? So Ahasuerus, in order to ingratiate himself with all of the wealthy merchants, like you mentioned before, he lifted taxes on the wealthy. And then I guess at the end he realized he was supposed to levy taxes on the wealthy. I guess that's what changed. There's a lot of room for political commentary here, apparently. So what is Kalim Shonim? Mishunimi violation. You say Mishunim, meaning many different kinds of Kalim, a variety of Kalim. What does it mean Kalim Shonim? Amar Rava, Yotzisa Baskova, Amar Lahem, Rishonim, Kalu, This is referring back to what we learned last week. Remember Belshazzar? He miscalculated the 70 years. He threw a party. He brought out the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, and then he died because of that. So this is a musar that's being given to Achashverosh. Meaning, there's two words here. It's kalim, like in the pasuk, but the first word means kloya, like we saw earlier in Jewish people, that they would be destroyed, they'd be annihilated. So it's asking, you think you're better than Belshazzar? Belshazzar did the exact same thing, and he was annihilated. You think you're going to be any better the second time around? So that was a musar given to Achashverosh. Sure enough, as we learned, we have the whole story of Vashti, which we're going to get to momentarily, right? Everyone, this is like one of the most famous stories Agadatas on the Megillah, is what happened to Vashti, that there's a lot more between the lines than the Megillah lets on. So we're going to get that, God willing, momentarily. But before that, next section, the Yain Malchus Rav. By the way, I love how we're going to focus on the word Rav, and who's the rabbi that decides to interpret that word for us? It's Rav. Anyone get a kick out of that? Okay. Amar Rav, Malame Shikol Echa Be'echa Hishko Yain Shikob Lehenosh, because it should have said Harbe, that there's a lot of wine. Why say Rav? So Rav explains, it teaches us Shikol Echa Be'echa Hishko Yain Shikob Lehenosh, that if you were 60 years old, your wine was at least 61 years old. If you're 30 years old, your wine was at least 31 years old. So your wine had to be older than you are. You know, that's like, imagine you go to one of Erwin Niederberg, he brings out the scotch, you're an 8 o'clock Kiddush, and imagine like everyone gets like a scotch that, I mean, I guess I wouldn't get something too good, but I would still be near like 30 years. So I mean, I'd still get a solid scotch out of that. I don't think, are there any scotches that are like 60 years old? I think at a certain point you get like diminishing returns. Like how long can you keep it in there for? Yeah, okay. The hashkia chedas in onyx. So my chedas, what's the word chedas mean? A das usually means like a religion, a law. Amarachana mishra emeir, chedas shel Torah. It sounds firmer than it really is, but they definitely wasn't done in accordance with the Torah. But what does it mean, Kedash al Torah, that they drank wine in accordance with how the Torah commands it? Ma dash al Torah achila meruba mishkia, asu dasa shalosa rasha achila meruba mishkia. Because when you have a carbon and you drink it with the wine, and you have the wine libation with it, the food outnumbers the wine. I mean, I know we're comparing solids and liquids, but the food outweighs the wine that you're going to have. So similarly over here, there was a lot more eating than drinking going on, which, bad thing, good thing. I mean, yeah, you're like, we're shrugging, like, yeah, you shouldn't be drinking more wine than you're eating. That's not a good idea. So okay, maybe it's a good thing. I didn't look into different interpretations of that. In ones, what does it mean, in ones? That each person got to drink a wine from his own country. Which is interesting, by the way, because you would think people want to try exotic wines from different countries. Why do I want to drink from my own? So I'll tell you a very brief story. Now I'm getting a lot of trouble tonight with all my stories. When I was in college, I did this internship program. It was like called CLIP, run by NYU's Jewish programs. And it was unabashedly a far left program, politically speaking. Like, we got sessions from them on the title of one session was "Assume Gay Until Proven Otherwise." It was a lesbian reform rabbi who converted Catholicism to reform Judaism, and like she was like giving us like this, and she like gave a whole slideshow about "Bahaftarecha Kamocha" and "Bitzel Elokim," and that was like all of her sources. Anyway, just to give you an idea of the program. So on this program, there was actually a relatively reasonable lecture where they were talking about people who come from an impoverished background, and there are certain basic human rights, they use the term for that, to have housing, to have the ability of social mobility, etc. And then there was like one thrown in, which was culturally appropriate food. And we're like, if you are starving, We could get you like a sandwich, and like, you don't eat sandwiches from wherever you're coming from. You'll be fine. It's not a basic human right that if you come from India, you have to have paneer cheese. I only know it because I checked out Ratna and I know it's called a paneer cheese. That's what I learned my Mashkiach experience. You know, like, what does that mean? But apparently, what's funny over here in the Gemara, it's like people dafka want to have wine from their own country. Apparently, there's a mila to that. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say it's a human right, a whole separate discussion about the notion of rights in Judaism, but I that's what I was thinking of when I read this line over here.
In my study, way back this past Shabbos, the thought was given that the people would be familiar with and prefer the wine from their own country because they're used to it. Now, that might have been a footnote, I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, I think absolutely correct. That's what you're used to. It's just a funny notion because usually whenever we have all these like scotch tasting events, I remember I went to one when I was an intern in Plainview. One of the most educational parts of being an intern for 2 years in Plainview was every Shabbos went to someone else's home and I learned about all the different kinds of scotches out there. I'm definitely far from a bucky, but I could definitely know what kind of scotches I enjoy now. So usually I remember we had a scotch tasting event. And the senior rabbi there, he didn't drink. In fact, he was like in principle against drinking. So actually, I got to go to the event and give the short Dvar Torah over there and then enjoy myself on Friday night. And so I remember like, oh, this scotch, this is it's a new special Japanese whiskey. Like, oh, it's exotic. It's from Japan. Some people like exotic drinks. Okay, I don't know what to make of it. Moving forward. Lasos keratzon ish fa ish. So, in order to fulfill the will of each and every man. Amarava, lasos keratzon Mordechai va Haman. Mordechai desiv ish Yehudi, Haman desiv ish sarvo ye. This is a very interesting line. Because, at least the way I was always taught as a kid, and that's certainly in line with one interpretation, one opinion in the Gemara, is that, remember, we learn how to sin according to the students of Rishon Reichai. Was the actual attendant of the Suda. Forget about the glatt kosher food, but it was attending the Suda that was the issue. But the interesting part over here is not only is that not the issue, but Mordechai himself was actually there at the Suda. Haman was going around trying to get everyone to eat treif, while Mordechai was going around trying to make sure that everyone kept kosher. So it's interesting. You actually have two different philosophies. Someone posted on Twitter today, he was like, some yeshivish guy trying to make fun of like the modern Orthodox community. He's like, yeah, you know, I bet like all these people, they asked their modern Orthodox rabbi for a heter to go watch the new Avengers movie during Sphira in the movie theater. And then someone's like, no, they don't ask, modern Orthodox people don't ask their rabbi for a heter for these things. The rabbi goes with them. So it was like, that's for here. Like, was Mordechai at home while everybody was going to the Suda and committing Kol Dvar Asur? Or did he go into the trenches with them and try to make the best of the situation and say, you know what? You're going to be here right now. You're going to be watching the Super Bowl, but, you know, let's make some brachos and eat kosher. Yeah. So that's the two different philosophies there.
Well, everything that happened there was kosher because it was under rabbinic supervision.
That was exactly the point. And there was also the Hashkacha of Haman Arasha at the same time. So who do you want to take from? Okay. Now we're at the really fun part. We're going to do the first part of the story right now, and we'll end off, not on a cliffhanger, but we'll continue with it next time. This is the story of Vashti. Because you just read the Megillah, and you're like, okay, Vashti, she refused to go with the king, but, you know, okay. So she got decapitated, she got her head chopped off, she's dead. But here, you know, you can almost feel bad for Vashti a little bit. Without really knowing who Vashti is. So Chazal say, don't worry, don't feel bad for Vashti. She had it coming. And what do we mean by that? Well, listen to this story over here. And if you take Chazal at the word that this is how it went down, you can understand why we don't really have such a positive disposition when it comes to Vashti. So the Gemara asks, why it say it took place in the house of the kingship? Why it should say in the house where the women were having their suda? Then, right, the men have their suda in one house, the women have their suda in another house. So I just got back from a Sheva Brachos. You know, there's There's a whole sugya. There's a whole, like, Rav Moshe Shmerman has a fiery tshuva against people sitting together at weddings and at Sheva Brachos. In fact, I think, I forget, it's the Bach or it's the Magin Avraham. One of the Nosei Kalim on the Shulchan Aruch says there's certain parts of the Sheva Brachos you're not even allowed to say if men and women are sitting together. I don't know who holds that nowadays, but it's interesting to note. So, based on Ashmi Vaile, you should have said the women were in their own quarters. Amarava. See, the funny thing is, you just read the Megillah on your own, you think, oh, this is really from. Achashverosh had the men in one suda, Vashti had the ladies in another suda, right? Even the guy you know to have separate seating. No, Amarava. They actually were intending to sin. It wasn't like the women were in their own separate area, the men were in their own, but they deliberately put the sudas right near each other so that at Kiddush, you know, we don't see it's at a Kashav, we just have a regular mixed Kiddush. At the Yeshivish places, like some of these Yeshivish places are hard line, like there's a separate Kiddush for women, separate for men. The ones are like kind of like nishtahin, nishtahair. They have a table going down the middle, and the men kind of are supposed to be on one side, one on the other side, but then like 10 minutes later, it's a whole mishmash, it's a tarobes. Right, Toby, you see on the five towns? Right, because I saw you laughing over there. So.
I used to see it always in Muncie.
But now it's
become lived in Muncie.
So this is like, what's the point? There, but then there'll be a Tyrovis. Okay. It's like what they say, that the man has deals with the big pumpkins, the one with the small ones, basically say that if the man is up to no good, then his wife is likely up to no good as well. That's just what Chazal say. I'm not taking any position on the matter. On the seventh day, when the king has had a lot of wine, did it take him 7 days to drink that much wine that he finally got inebriated? What took him so long? Why does it say dafka the seventh day? It doesn't mean the seventh day of the Suda per se. It means the seventh day of the week on Shabbos is when the following episode took place. Here this line of my Rebbeim always love to quote, especially around Purim time. When the Yidden, when you come to a Purim soon and the Yidden drink and they get inebriated, they start sharing Divrei Torah with each other out of their simcha. Udivrei Sishpachos. When the guy can get drunk, they just start, you know, talking about what we're about to tell you. The What were all the non-Jews? What was Achashverosh and the boys talking about at their party? One was saying the women from Madai look better. The Halorim Parsios knows the Persian women look better. All of Achashverosh. The kli that I use, referring to Vashti, is better than from all your other countries. And she's a Babylonian. You know, it's kind of funny because, you know, usually we mix all of the Middle Eastern nations under the category of Sephardi, but, you know, it's like, you know, any Sephardim over here? But, you know, like within Spartan themselves, there's like all the infighting. And then, like, if you're from Iran, it depends if you're Mashadi or from this city, you can't intermarry from an Iranian from another city. So, you know, we don't appreciate all these nuances, but apparently that's what they were debating over here. So, Amrlo, Azrutuk and Larosa, do you want to see her? Amrlo in. However, she has to come out nude. Shemida As. Now, the Gemara explains why did this all happen. This is Mida Kenegamida. Because what you do, God sends right back to you. You get what you deserve. She would take little Jewish, she would take these Jewish girls, she'd make them work on Shabbos without clothing. And I just remember all that was done to Vashti and the Gezerah that was put upon her. Why did the Megillah have to say Asher Nigzar Aleha? We know what happened to her. That which was under her. That she got killed. What do you mean Asher Nigzar Aleha? Kishem Sha'asasa, just as she did to others, Kach Nigzar Aleha. So too was Nigzar. It was decreed upon her as well. And that's why it all took place on Shabbos as well. Because it was on Shabbos that you make the Jewish girls take their clothing and disgrace them and work on Shabbos? So too, her Mita Keneged Mita, just desserts came back on Shabbos for her as well, and Yom HaShvi, that she too was asked to come out without clothing. And that's ultimately what brought Vashti's downfall as well. Mita Keneged Mita. So let me just point out one thing over here. I think it's the Ben Yehoyada. So this is like a weird dialogue, by the way. You know, like I understand it's like, you know, it's locker room talk and everything, but this is like a really weird dialogue. No? Akashir says, well, my woman's better than all your women. And then they're like, oh, bring her out. What's going on over here? It's like, you know, this is you can say in Hakinami, it's just locker room talk. But the Ben Yehoda says there's actually more of a thought process going on over here. I'm not justifying this, I'm just explaining it. What was going on in the mind of these people when they asked him to tell Vashti to come out? What was going on was when Achashver said, do you want to see her? What they were concerned was is that they too would have to bring out their own wives as well. And yeah. What were they afraid would happen? That if Ahasuerus liked one of their wives more than Vashti, he's the king. He'll just take her for himself. Therefore, they basically were bluffing him. They were saying, oh, well, we know he's not actually going to do this. So, yeah, well, you have to bring her out naked. Even he like, wouldn't be stupid enough to make a request like that. However, Akashir called her bluff, and he did call out, he did try calling out Vashti in the end. But why would they make such an egregious request? Because they were hoping that he actually would back down at that point, that he would fold. Akashir should not fold, and that's how we have Vashti's ultimate demise. So I thought that was actually like, I like the thought process that they gave to them. They're actually trying to save themselves, and that's why they dared him. It's an interesting take on the story. Okay, that's all I got for you guys. Any questions before we conclude? Crazy Gemara, right? I told you, a little bit more engaging than a bunch of mathematical calculations. Yeah.
That was a lot. Interesting.
It was fun. That was a good one.
Yeah. Yep. And we continue the story tomorrow, God willing. That's our next week, Kamir Teshem. So thank you all for your flexibility on joining at 8:45 tonight and changing last minute. God willing, we'll be back to 7 o'clock. That way we could all get a proper night's sleep. Okay, have a wonderful Shabbos, everyone.
Thank you. Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos, everybody. Good Shabbos.